podcasting from Nashville, Tennessee. This is Keep Asking, the podcast that helps you dig deeper and wider into the research providing insights into today's church and culture. I'm here today with my colleague Scott McConnell and president of Lifeway, Dr. Tom Rayner. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Lizette. I'm so impressed with that long introduction that is so flowery and just so descriptive of all the accomplishments and the achievements I've done. So thank you for that. I'm totally whelmed. I'm totally whelmed with that introduction.
You know, and I spent a good part of the morning thinking, is Dr. Rayner going to come in ready for funny today or serious? I need to prepare for serious, but now I'm really distraught that I didn't prepare more for funny.
How about sleep deprived?
Oh.
So maybe hilarious. Though nobody really thinks I'm hilarious.
I need you to know I am now super excited, and Scott is probably super stressed right now.
Scott, wake up. Wake up, Scott.
I'm here. I'm ready.
All right.
So we're here to talk about your book, Becoming a Welcoming Church.
Deep theological treatise that it is.
Always. But good stuff. Right off the bat, I want to talk about this holy huddle that you describe in there. One of your previous accomplishments, former sounds like it's over, as dean of the Billy Graham School.
I met you then.
Yes.
You designed my first website.
You remember that?
Oh, yeah. I remember that. The Rayner Group. I remember that. I'd never had my own website before. That I was so impressed. It was so exciting.
And
what year was that? Like 1958,
59? Probably. It was far enough back that I did it using Microsoft Front Page. So that can dazzle our
I've never heard of that.
I'm not surprised either.
That it's basically Microsoft Publisher or PowerPoint for websites. So anyway, as the dean of the Billy Graham School of Missions, this idea of the holy huddle, would you think that is a typically American problem or situation? Americans, or maybe Western, we're more independent, we're kind of on our own, and so when we do get together with other people, we're drawn. Or do you suspect this is happening in other cultures that are more relational, more interdependent?
Well, first of all, we need to define what a holy huddle is. A holy huddle is when people who know each other gather together instead of people who don't know each other speaking to one another. And you're asking a broad cultural question, Lizette, and I would say even within North America, there are different cultural contexts on how people respond, whether or not they have holy huddles or not. For example, some time ago I did a consultation in Canada. And I noticed that they had zero holy huddles. Now, I didn't know I'm not going to say it's unique to Canada because it's big geographically.
Right.
And there could be a lot of different places around.
Correct.
But there were no gatherings of people. I'm thinking of another consultation that I did in Southern California, thinking that they probably culturally would not have the holy huddles, but like maybe somebody in the Midwest or Deep South would, but they did. So I see it as contextually different all over the place. It's more community-based instead of any particular nation, although we may point to specific indigenous cultures that are different than that. But for the most part, here's what I really think. I think about 70-80%, I'm making the number up, Scott, so don't give me a margin of error on that. I'm thinking about 70-80% of folks probably have churches that have holy huddles from my anecdotal perspective.
Okay. I think you have enough experience then.
As we've been looking through and reading your book, Becoming a Welcoming
Church. How long
did
it take you, just Scott?
It took me a whole evening, and I'm a slow reader.
Oh, gosh. I can't believe that. That's one potty reading. That's all it is. You didn't take that long to read.
We're keeping all of this in.
But one of the things you described is kind of this social construct of when a guest shows up at church, they often tend to sit by themselves. They look for an open space. They don't want to take anybody's seat, so they kind of find this open spot. But then they are like, why is nobody sitting near me when it's finally time for church to start? And I mean, I see that when I get on an airplane like Southwest, where you pick your own seats, or on a bus. you know, people naturally go to the spot where nobody is because mm-hmm. I don't want to be next to someone.
Yeah.
And it's only when you have
and,
to.
And the men's room.
Have you ever, don't be too close.
Okay. Yes. Yes. You know, you space those as well. If you've ever, have you ever noticed that? There's a science to going into an airport men's room. There really is. You, the first thing you want to do is you want to be on the end, if at all possible, because that eliminates one person standing next to you. And then you hope that there will be a number of spaces next to you. Same situation. Don't you agree, Scott?
Absolutely. Even if it's designed for a kiddo,
yes.
you still use that convention.
That's right. Exactly.
I need to point out this is the happiest day of my entire life.
Didn't you just get married?
Yes, I did. Oh, okay. So sad. Oh, man. I'm going to be in trouble this entire time. Go ahead.
So when we think about guests coming in and going for the open space just naturally, how can a welcoming church kind of combat that?
Intentionality, Scott. Before we went live on air, well, not live, before we started recording on air, Lizette and I were having a conversation about my youngest son, Jess, who is also my pastor. You weren't engaged in the conversation because you're quiet like you always were, but Lizette was yakking away, and she was talking about what a wonderful guy he is, and her husband met him, and one of the things that Jess did is he said, "Dad, what have you found out about guests in terms of where we could be perhaps the most vulnerable in losing guests?" And I said, "Oh, that's easy. I've seen it again and again. It's not out in the parking lot. We have great greeters there. It's not when they walk into the front door. They're doing a great job there. It's not even in the little foyer of the church. They're doing fine. It's after they sit down." He said, "What do we do?" I said, "That's easy. We have worship service greeters whose responsibility, intentionality, is to go and sit by someone or at the very least talk to them and then introduce them to someone and ask them to go sit with them." So that is the time when guests are telling us in the secret guest surveys that we've done throughout the years, that's the time when those guests are telling us that they feel most unwelcome and most awkward. So what do? We just be intentional about it, and we make sure that our welcoming ministry, greeter ministry, whatever we may call it, we make sure that we're highly intentional about going to those guests and sitting down with them.
Do you feel like that undermines the idea that visitors want to be anonymous that we heard through the rise of the seeker movement, that people want to be, there's their anonymity, they want it protected?
I think there's a difference between anonymity and feeling welcome. Anonymity means don't call on me, don't put me on the front row. Anonymity means I don't want to stick out. But look, one of the worst ways to have non-anonymity, if there's such a phrase, but one of the ways not to be anonymous is you're sitting there by yourself, a family of four, for example, and no one's around you. All of a sudden, everybody's looking at you. You're no longer anonymous. So they actually feel more comfortable is that when someone is coming in and sitting with them.
You co-authored the book Transformational Church a number of years ago, and one of the key elements in that book that I thought was breakthrough was this idea of relational intentionality. And as I read Becoming a Welcoming Church, I really saw you applying those principles that almost seem like a paradox of be naturally have relational with people and naturally engaging with them, but then on the other extreme, being intentional. And to throw an example in, you mentioned having a sign audit at a church. That seems like this, type A, really intentional kind of activity. And yet somehow you're inviting a church to do both at the same time.
Yeah. Well, let's look at this room. Who's in the podcast room right now? You got Lizette, over the top extrovert. I mean, in your face, in your space, all the time. Always saying inappropriate things because you can't stop talking. Okay.
Correct.
Then there's Scott and Tom. And kind of on the introvert, not kind of with me. I think you're pretty much an introvert, and
pretty
I'm
much
an introvert. And then Justin over here to my left, I put him somewhat in the midpoint leaning toward introversion, and then Amy J midpoint leaning toward introversion. Is that close enough? So we have in this room different personalities, and we basically have two extremes if you and I are on one extreme and Lizette is on the other extreme. However, relational intentionality still has to happen. I have to make myself go and talk to someone at church. I'd rather go to a corner, just sit down and not have any type of conversation. That's who I am. So for me, and probably a Scott McConnell as well, we have to be much more intentional. For Lizette, probably pull her back just a little bit, just because she's going to be intentional about any type of conversation that is taking place. Tell me your life story. Oh, that sounds bad. Tell me more. And so you've got to understand the personality. But in both cases, there's intentionality. You talk about the signs. That sounds so blasé, so theological, so just common sense. Well, it is common sense if you're in the church a lot, but if there's a sign that says restrooms this way and it's not that way, well, that's not good. That's not good. Or particularly if you have a young family and it says this way to check in your children and there's not a way to check in the children. So for a lot of this, it's just common sense, but we don't use common sense when it's our home. Mm. We use common sense. We have to use common sense for the guests, not for us.
I've been that person where they have to ask you where the restrooms are because you don't have good signage, and you can't get a meaningful conversation in when they've got to go.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You're better off having the signage.
Y'all notice my drink?
It's orange.
It's Monster Energy Ultra Sunrise. Yeah, I actually take one of these before I go to church in the morning, drink one of these, so that I'll have a little more energy to be extroverted with the guests. So I drink this on the way to church.
If you saw me walking down the hall with one of those, how would you react?
Oh, I would be all over it. I mean,
you wouldn't run away?
Well, with you?
Yeah, with me.
Well, I'd make fun of you first. Yeah, stay away from this.
So I'm that over-the-top person that runs people off because they're too welcoming.
Yeah,
and it seems desperate.
I'm not going to disagree. I'll affirm you in your extraordinary extroversion.
As you have worked with churches and helped them go through this process, how do you help them address the issue of the resistant members who won't let go of, well, we know we're friendly, we know we're welcoming, even though you've presented some evidence, some observations to the contrary?
All right, well, let's talk about phase one, which you're mentioning here. And phase one is basically giving them outside eyes, where someone comes in and has done a secret guest or mystery visitor, whatever you call him or her. And so that is the first step. You want them to hear from outside eyes. When I was a pastor in both Florida and Birmingham, we had the secret guest twice a year. For 1 6-month period, it would be someone who is never in church, unchurched totally, and the other one would be someone who is regular church but has never come to our church. And we wanted two different perspectives. And every time it was eye-opening. So the first part of your question, Lizette, is that, okay, let's let them see through outside eyes. But now you're asking another part. What if they're resistant? What if even with the overwhelming evidence that you are a church that is not welcoming to guests, what do? Is you work with what you have. It's called the workaround principle. You know, you can bowl over people and tell them they're doing everything wrong, or you can work with those who are workable. So when it's all said and done, I would say if you have some resistant folks to this, go with those who are not resistant. Go with the most friendly. Put them on the welcoming team. Don't put the curmudgeon on the welcoming team. Don't put the person who always votes no in the business meeting on the welcoming team.
That's an excellent point.
Well, one of the fun things of having a researcher on the Keep Asking podcast is we can ask you one of those impossible questions people ask us.
Yeah.
Because
I've got a statistic for it.
Well, excellent. So do you think churches have as many guests as they used to?
Well, the used to threw me. I got to say that for just a minute. I thought you were about to say, do churches have many guests? And now, as used to, I would say no. And the reason I would say no is because of the death of cultural Christianity. Cultural Christianity used to bring in people who were the politicians, the business people, or those who just wanted standing in the community, and they felt like they had to come to church in order to have standing acceptance in the community. That was cultural Christianity. It was actually the easiest growth of the church, and it was the most frequent guest. Those people are disappearing. You don't have to be in church to be accepted in the community, to be accepted in politics, to have business transactions take place in your business. So the people that we used to reach the easiest, the cultural Christians, are not coming. So even though I don't have good statistical data, you statistical nerd, you Scott, even though I don't have that information, I would say from a strong anecdotal perspective, we have fewer guests. Now, the other part of the question that I thought you were going to ask, and since you didn't, I'll ask it myself. Do we have guests that come on a regular basis? And the answer is we have a lot more than we think we do. Let's talk about the church of 150. And let's say that church of 150 has one family, different family of four that visit. So four people, just one family. Multiply that times 50, 200 guests that you have. You have more guests, first-time guests that come to your church than your average attendance. And that is not atypical. So we have a lot of guests. We probably don't have as many as we used to.
Good point.
So I asked your question, answered your question, and I answered my question.
Now, Scott, didn't you want to take issue with Dr. Rainer, as we discussed in prep for this yesterday, on that isn't this about more about the people as opposed to all the signs and, you know, the facilities? So I'd like to stir up that and create...
Oh, gravy train.
Well, as I was reading, I think I found the answer to that. Because you're really getting at an attitude, are you not, in this book?
Bingo. See, he answered his own question, oh, contrarian one.
I know. I was just trying to keep things lively. And
So you think Rainer's an idiot, do you, Scott?
No, that is not. My annual review is tomorrow. I'm filled with regret.
So how do you try to foster that type of attitude? Because it's one thing to go through the logistics with folks and to encourage them to be a part of the logistics, but how do you make people want to?
Okay, let me give you a Rainer story. This is a Thom Rainer story. So I resisted going on international mission trips when I was dean of the Billy Graham School of Missions. That was kind of ironic. You know, my idea of a mission trip is going somewhere other than the panhandle of Florida. So that was something that I just was not want to do. And my team was telling me, come on, you've got to go on an international mission trip just to have any credibility. And so they scheduled a trip to Uganda, and we flew into Entebbe and Kampala, and they said, everything's going to be okay. You're not going to freak out. There will be Diet Cokes in your refrigerator. You will have electricity. And so all of those things that I was worried about. But here's what happened, Scott. I came back from Uganda totally enthused about doing international missions. Mm. Not that I've done a lot since then, but my attitude changed. Your attitude doesn't change by someone hammering it into your head. Your attitude changes when you do something. So some of the most resistant folks, you may say for 1 week, not permanently, don't get the curmudgeon on there, for 1 week, come and work alongside me if you're that person, and let's go and greet guests together and see what you really think. So attitudes are usually changed by actions, not by more compulsion of other attitudes.
Nice.
Dr. Rainer, thank you so much. How can folks find you online, though? I'm pretty sure they may already know.
Lizette.beard@lifeway.com.
Oh, that is...
No longer.
Well, I am... that is still my email address, unless you're giving me a hint.
Yeah, you got to change that last name. No, you can find me at tomrainer.com, okay. thomrainer.com. That's the easiest way to find me.
Thank you so much for coming today and being so fun. And we want to thank our listeners for listening. If you have any questions, please tweet to us at SMCon or at Lizette Tweets. Join us next time for another edition of Keep Asking. Keep asking, learn more, do better.